On the Feast of Pentecost, we celebrated the love of God coming down upon us like a fire. And the whole church was set on fire with divine love. This upcoming Sunday, we're going to celebrate the love of God in Himself, the Holy Trinity, a communion of perfect and eternal love. So these feast days certainly draw our hearts, our thoughts up into the loftiest and most beautiful of levels, divine love. Today's gospel brings us back down to earth and to the question of divorce, which seems to most people like a completely separate thing. There's no divorce in heaven, there's no divorce in God, so it's obviously not a theological question. That's an earthly question. It's a social question. It's an issue that involves human dynamics and personalities and laws. So it seems like they're not connected. Well, of course they're connected. Of course they're connected. And Jesus makes it very clear. This topic of divorce is hot again in the Philippines because it's again being debated in the Congress. I'm not following it too closely, but I looked it up yesterday, and apparently it's already passed the House. Is that right? So it's passed its third reading, passed in the House. Now it goes on to the Senate. The terminology that seems to be thrown around is absolute divorce. I'm not sure why they call it that, but absolute sounds pretty serious. Absolute divorce. And one of the arguments that is always thrown out in these discussions, this is not maybe the best way to bring this up because this is a homily, it's supposed to be reflecting on the mysteries of God, but let's just put it in the context of the current social debate. One of the arguments is that the only country in the world that doesn't have divorce yet is the Philippines. And I've heard this said so many times, except for the Vatican. So the only two countries in the world are the Vatican and the Philippines are the only countries that don't have legal divorce or absolute divorce. Now, I don't know if that's true. Maybe it is. I never looked it up, but there's a lot of countries. I don't know what they do. And there's, Western democracies, sure, Western countries, divorce has been legalized for years. But what's going on in the Islamic countries or the some of the African countries, I don't know. Under dictatorships, I don't know. But let's assume it's true. But the argument is said that way. The only countries in the world are the Vatican and the Philippines. The implication is, well, the Vatican, there's no hope for them. They're hopelessly medieval, backward religiosity country. I mean, don't expect the Vatican to have their act together or to be up to date. Therefore, the Philippines is the only country which is stuck in the past, stuck in a patriarchal, oppressive, medieval mentality. And the Philippines should just grow up and get with the program and get up to date and catch up with everybody else. That's the implication, right? When you hear that argument, that means, why is the Philippines so slow to do what everybody else does? It's not a very good argument, because that implies, the implication is that everybody's right except for the Philippines. If you want to continue to make a social analysis of it, look at the effect of the change in marriage laws on the societies of the countries where it's legal. Marriages have fallen apart, families have fallen apart, social structures have fallen apart. Divorce rates skyrocketed in the 70s and stayed pretty high until people stopped marrying, and then the divorce rates started to go down because people didn't marry in the first place. The incidence of domestic abuse actually increased. The incidence of poverty among single parents, especially single women with young children, that went way up. The problem of abuse of children by the second partner or the second husband of the wife, that went up. And you could go on and on. There's a whole litany of statistics that seem to indicate divorce has not really helped society. Now, I know people can say, you can use statistics to support any argument, and yeah, that can be debated. But it's not obvious that divorce has helped the world. That's not obvious. Just looking at it from a social science perspective. Another argument that comes up, although not in this case, but you hear this a lot, whenever anybody wants to defend a position, they'll say, Jesus never said anything about X, Y, or Z. Jesus never said anything about abortion. Jesus never said anything about nuclear weapons. Jesus never said anything about in vitro fertilization. That's on and on and on. But that argument doesn't work when it comes to divorce, because Jesus spoke very explicitly about divorce, and this gospel is an example of it. This is Mark chapter 10. So let's go now to what Jesus says about divorce. The Pharisees asked the question, is it lawful for a husband to divorce his wife? It's husbands who are asking for the freedom from their wives. I can't help but bring this up. You know, people always make this argument that an absolute divorce law is a women's rights issue because it's women who are caught in oppressive marriages and they need freedom. Of course, there's good arguments to be made about helping women in oppressive situations. But you can't help but see, if you open your eyes, that the divorce laws are very often weaponized against women. And if the issue is abusive husbands or terrible men, you want to give them freedom to marry someone else? Is that what you want? Because that's what happens. So you get a man who's a bad husband, he's free to absolutely divorce his wife and leave her and the children in poverty, and then go off and marry somebody else and do the same thing again. That's kind of what's implied here. The Pharisees are saying, is it lawful for a husband to divorce a wife? They're not saying, can wives get out of the oppressive, abusive relationships? They're not asking that. The answer is, Jesus says, well, what did Moses say? Moses, he permitted husbands to leave their wives, to write out a decree of divorce. But then Jesus says the reason why that happened, it was a concession to hardness of heart. Divorce was allowed as a concession to human stubbornness. And that was never in the plan of God from the beginning. It's quite a striking thing that, now we're talking in a religious context, I'll leave aside the halls of Congress and the debates about social sciences. We're talking about religious principles here and divine revelation. In the old law, divorce was allowed, but that was never the plan of God. It was a concession to human weakness. And it's striking because Jesus doesn't usually change the old law so directly. He doesn't usually. Sometimes he does, but usually he says, I didn't come to abolish the law. I didn't come to undo what was already set up. I came to fulfill it. But in this case, when it comes to divorce, yes, I am abolishing that law. That wasn't right. But that's not the plan of God. Let's go back to the beginning. From the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. From the beginning of creation, that's the way it is. That's the two genders. That's the two options. And God makes us male or female. Everybody is either male or female. That's how it is. It's not oppressive. It's not discrimination. It's not homophobia or anything. That's just the way it is. It's just reality revealed. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That goes all the way back to Genesis. Jesus adds this. Therefore, what God has joined together, no human being must separate. That's not in the old law. It's not what it says. But that's what Jesus says. What God has joined together, no human being must separate. Gosh. This is not then an issue of statistics and social sciences. This is Jesus, the Word of God, revealing the plan of God, and it's absolute. What absolute divorce? This is absolute marriage. This is why this is controversial. It was controversial when Jesus said it. It still is. But let's think about it a little bit. This comes from God. God is love. God never intended sin to enter the world. He never intended people to have abusive relationships or trauma from bad marriages. That wasn't the intention. God didn't decide that we should suffer. That's the result of sin, which entered into the world through our misuse of freedom. But God is love, and God set up a plan to make his love known, to share his love with the human family. And it's right in the very nature of marriage, in the very nature of human sexuality, male and female. Love is planted right in our bodies. And everyone who loves has a basic sense of this, that love is absolute, that love is, it can't be quantified or licensed for a certain period of time or just be temporary. If I say I'm going to love you for 1 year or for 10 years, you would say, well, that's not really love. There was a proposal, this is some years ago now, that marriage licenses should be renewable. That was here. Renewable, 10 years, like driver's licenses. You get a driver's license for 10 years, then when it expires, you have to renew it. And someone was saying, well, that's the way it should be with marriage, because sometimes marriages go bad and you don't want to renew it. But who would ever marry someone who said, I'm only going to marry you for 10 years? Nobody would do that. When people marry, and nobody forces them, when people marry, they marry because they love and because they trust the spouse enough to love. And it's a risk, but it's a good step to take. Marriage is a very beautiful institution of love. It's a divine project. And most people take it on. Most people get married and they want to. Now, everyone knows it's difficult. That's because of our fallen nature. But it's not as if marriage is a bad thing and it should be absolutely ended. When we do end marriage in this absolute sense, and people are free to marry others, there's a whole host of bad consequences. Now, there's always going to be objections, and everybody knows that some people should not live together. Everybody knows that. Some people should not live together. Some people should not get married. Some people should not have been married. Some marriages are not real marriages in the first place. Yes, that's true. But the plan of God for marriage is a very beautiful plan. So let's go back to where we started. Love, divine love, poured into human hearts, the Holy Spirit at work, making us divine, drawing us into communion with God. That's what this is all about. If we're going to accept that the very ground of all reality is love, if we're going to participate in God's plan for love, well, this is what it means. This is what it means. God will never divorce us. God's love never ends. It never expires. It doesn't have to be renewed. God's love is permanent and perfect. It's absolute. Absolute. And our very being is built on absolute love. And our relationships are built on absolute love. That's what love is. It's absolute. So with all the many factors that have to be addressed, let's not forget the very root of everything that is God's absolute love for us.